You're listening to The Human Upgrade with Dave Asprey. Formerly Bulletproof Radio. You're listening to The Human Upgrade with Dave Asprey. Today, I am excited to chat with a longtime friend I've known really well for more than 10 years, who is a fellow expert in how to make your brain work better. In fact, he has taught people amazing memory capabilities, both at the Biohacking Conference, by the way, end of May in Dallas. Go to biohackingconference.com. I want you to sign up right now. Well, the tickets are lower cost. Jim's been there, I think almost every one of them, teaching brain stuff. And he's got a new book. This is Jim Quick I'm talking about. A new book out, which is Limitless Expanded. So he's going into things like nootropics, things that are near and dear to both of us. So I'm going to ask him the hard questions because he is a memory expert. And so I'm going to see if he remembers all the stuff in his own book. And if he doesn't, would you please join me in shaming Jim Quick?
Thanks for that call out. That's awesome. I love that on social media. It's my favorite thing. If you were actually the first guest we've had on our podcast, we were at a launch party. You were doing a speech and we were backstage. And my podcast started on my phone. So we just passed the phone back and forth, voice memo. And we're honored to have you as the first guest. Oh. But you're one of my favorite people. So
thanks, Jim. I like to think that one of my roles in life is to find people doing really worthy work, and then doing whatever I can to help more people know about them. And you're doing so much worthy work. Just you have on yourself. You proved it on yourself, and then with others. And it's funny because Tim Ferriss was on before he had a podcast. Andrew Huberman before he had a podcast. Peter Attia before he had a podcast. Wow. They've all been on The Human Upgrade, which is really cool. And these are all people I respect. Who are doing fantastic things. And it's like Tim was very well known before he was on the show, but it's like anytime I can like highlight something that's new and different and amazing, what you're doing that's really consistent and you're very humble about it is, I remember when I did my book launch for the Bulletproof Diet, my first big book, you called me like, you got to do a launch party at my place here in Beverly Hills. And like, what do you mean? And it ends up there's, you know, every one of the X-Men is there in life, in like lifestyle statues, and you've trained all of the cast and crew and a huge number of Fortune 100 CEOs, like all these people at the highest levels, like, oh yeah. And Jim, and you're just like kind of this humble guy. I was like, let me tell you about your brain. Let me tell you about what's wrong with me. So you sit with humility, even though you've kind of like helped a huge number of people doing a lot of stuff with their brains. So I can do the shout out for you, even though you probably won't do it for yourself because you're just like that way.
Very kind. Very kind. Well, it's good. It's good to be back. Thank you for having me. Thank you, everyone who's tuning in to this brainy conversation.
Now, to get started, on page number 72, the fourth line down, what does that say?
Not my superpower.
By the way, if you could have answered that, I would have made fun of you for storing useless information in your brain. Yeah. Right? So there's no winning on that question. It's just a joke. But what I do want to do is talk about your childhood brain injury.
Yeah.
Because we just had Dr. Crawford on the show talking about lasers. Really? And I've had brain injuries from chemical stuff. And it just feels like more and more people out there are having serious brain problems. So many friends. So tell me about what happened when you were young, what it did to you, and how you improved and recovered, because I think that's going to help a lot of people know what's possible.
Yeah, the quick of it, when people see me at your events, sometimes if there's time, I'll do these demonstrations where we'll pass around a microphone and people introduce themselves and I'll memorize names or challenging, you know, long words, like 100 words, whatever, and I'll do it forwards and backwards. But people are surprised to hear that I don't do this to impress them. I do this to express them what's possible, because the truth is I feel like we could all do that regardless of our age or background or career, education level, financial situation, gender, history, IQ. We just weren't taught. So I think it's a deficiency in our school system that they taught us like things on what to learn, math and history and science, but no classes on how to learn. And I think it's an important subject. And so that's part of the nature of why I wrote this book and do these talks to show people, to really showcase what their capable of. As you alluded to, when I was 5 years old, I had a traumatic brain injury. I was in kindergarten class and I lost my balance standing on a chair. I went headfirst into a radiator. My parents said I was very playful and curious, very energized. I became very shut down emotionally, and it was challenging. I had sensory issues, somatic issues. I couldn't, maintain my balance sometimes. I was the last one picked for sports. I had these chronic migraines, and I didn't even realize that it wasn't normal not to have headaches every single day when I was a kid. Right. And that was just, that was a challenge. Teachers would repeat themselves over and over again, and I would eventually learn to pretend to understand, but I didn't understand. Oh, it took me 3 years longer to learn how to read. And that was very embarrassing. When they passed around that book, and I just didn't understand. And when I was 9 years old, a defining moment, I was being teased, and I got teased pretty harshly in school for various reasons, but this day was more than others. And a teacher came to my defense and pointed to me in front of the whole class and said, "Leave that kid alone. That's the boy with the broken brain." And that's, it's kind of got imprinted on me. I don't think we're born with any of these things. It's just, a blank slate, and our other people's expectations, our experience and their opinions, kind of like we're forming our personality. And so that was a big challenge. I mean, eventually it turns out okay for me, but when I was 18, I found a mentor. I got introduced to new content that was very helpful and helped up-level my learning and my life. And I've turned 50 this year, and it was just, I'm just very doubling down on just the mission to build better, brighter brains, no brain left behind. And I've learned so much from you and your show, your books. I think you've been on our show probably more than almost anybody else on our podcast. I think we're on this quest to reveal and realize our fullest potential. Mm-hmm. And when I first met you, I started really looking at the hardware, because before everything was software, meaning how to read faster, how to remember names or languages and give speeches without notes and focus. But, taking care of the hardware, that 3-pound matter between our ears, that doesn't come with an owner's manual. It's not super user friendly. And so, just on a mission to build better, brighter brains.
It's kind of funny, because if you have a really good brain and you don't know how to use it, you'll get subpar results. It's kind of like having a really fast computer and then you install like a 1990s operating system and it's just all crappy.
Yeah, well put.
But if you have a really slow computer and you install really good software on it, it's going to work better, right? But it may not work anywhere near as well as it should. So if you manage your hardware, get your brain so it's electrically working as well as it could, which means it's more efficient, and you do all of the things that you teach around how to do something, right? Yeah. It's the old thing I like to talk about. Okay, you can dig a hole with a shovel or you can dig a hole with a tractor. Well, your brain should be using the tractor whenever possible, because you can get more done. And just understanding that it's neither one, but that you have to have I'm going to call them soft skills that you teach, the techniques. Man, if I'd had those in school, I had a similar experience to him. I don't think I've ever talked about this. I have or at least I did, it's gone, an auditory processing disorder. It's part of being on the autism spectrum. It's part of the cluster of symptoms that they call Asperger's syndrome. And I didn't know this at the time as a kid. I was in the gifted programs. I was smart, but I also had like a misbehavior folder, like 10 inches thick, I'm sure. And I remember probably fourth grade, they were doing some kind of a math thing on the board, but I don't learn from hearing this. I didn't back then. I'm much better at that now. And so they were trying to explain it and I just didn't get it. And like after 10 times of them, like the teacher just saying, now do you get it? Finally, I was like, okay, sure, I get it. And I totally didn't. And I started crying because I was like, well, didn't you?
Was me. That was me daily.
Yeah, I just felt that when you were saying it. We've never talked about this before.
I didn't know that about you.
Yeah. And for people saying, what do you mean? People get mad online when I say, well, I used to have Asperger's syndrome. Guys, I spend like a lot of money and a lot of time, and I've retrained my movement, my vision, my hearing, like a lot of stuff in addition to fixing my mitochondria. There's a reason I know all things I know, because I had to be here in the form that I am today. And you are the same way, Jim. I mean, not that you had Asperger's, but that you've done so much work on yourself, and that's how it is.
And it's interesting, Dave, that, I mean, I'm sure a lot of your listeners can relate that with challenge comes change. With the consistent struggle that you and I had, it led to strengths in those areas that we were forced by life conditions to be able to level up, because we're just behind in certain areas. And I just feel like that's encouraging, that adversity could be advantage. I don't know one strong person that had an easy life.
It's true.
And so it's, it's one of the reasons why I love connecting with you and the community, and we're always recommending your work.
What if there was a way to level up your energy, get rid of stress, and take more control of your body? Welcome to Quantum Upgrade. This is a new technology that taps into quantum energy to help you feel amazing. Quantum Upgrade has a lot of different products that help protect you from EMF and help activate your body's natural healing abilities. You can expect better sleep, more resilience, less stress, and better blood flow. The cool thing about Quantum Upgrade is that the products are backed by a lot of heavy-duty scientific studies, and there's a new measurable upgrade. You can now use Quantum Upgrade to increase your consciousness levels between 1400 and 2200 on the Hawkins map of consciousness. If you don't know what that means, do some research, because it's impressive, it's fun to learn about, and it's something that I've come to understand. Ready to try Quantum Upgrade? Visit quantumupgrade.io/Dave for a 7-day free trial. Everyone's talking about red light therapy beds, and for good reason. There's a company called ARRC LED that's building an entirely new class of LED devices. ARRC LED beds integrate proprietary scanning technology and frequency protocols to shape the delivery of 6 different wavelengths in dose-optimized photobiomodulation. Yes, that's a lot of words. What it is, though, is that photobiomodulation improves the underlying energetics of the cells in your body. And those changes can benefit nearly every tissue and organ and system in your body. You change your cells and you change your life. For more information, visit arrcled.com.
So I think we're friends. In fact, we became really fast friends the first time we sat down at dinner together with JJ Virgin long ago at Michael Fishman's thing. Now, you wrote Limitless actually a while ago, and it was like all the soft techniques, and your new expanded edition, the reason I wanted to have you back on the show, is that you're talking about some things like nootropics and the other hardware things that have become more a part of what you're thinking about, which I love, because it's like, okay, you could train your memory like crazy, or in my case, the reason I could do some of what I do is aniracetam. Right. This is a gray zone cognitive enhancing substance that's been around for 30 plus years with a very high safety profile that increases memory IO. And for my brain, when I'm on that stuff, which I've been on it for 25 years, I can remember stuff and I can store it and I can bring it up way more fluidly. And if I'm not on it, I miss it because I have to pause to think. So that's an example of one that is relatively esoteric, but for me that mattered. But I would want to start with like the baseline stuff. In fact, that's why I teach people like you should have minerals and vitamin Dake. Go to vitamindake.com, guys, by the way, if you're interested in what I just said and don't know about it already. But tell me about, and those are not cognitive enhancers, those are just like baseline, the most foundational. I want to know straight before we get into optimization techniques, favorite nootropics. Like what are Jim Quick's top 5 nootropics?
So, and I know just familiar with your work, you talk about modafinil and nicotine. And so I'll go into other areas, in no particular order. And just you, I know you're the expert at this and you're one of the people I talked to before, you know, publishing this. And, let's see, L-theanine, it's an amino acid, often found. It's for me, it's an alert kind of relaxed. I don't feel so jittery. So to improve focus, reduce stress, is kind of like this alert calm. Bacopa, is this something you use, an Ayurvedic herb traditionally used to enhance memory and learning and concentration?
I like Bacopa. It's also got dopamine effects, I think. Mm-hmm. And for my brain, I like dopamine in all of its various forms. And the ones I haven't figured out yet. So if you're a neuro person, you're laughing at what I'm saying because I'm kind of making fun of myself. But yeah, for a lot of people, Bacopa can be really helpful.
There's an adaptogenic herb, rhodiola.
Love it.
It potentially enhance mental and physical performance, especially when you're under stress, support the brain's resilience to stress, to mental fatigue, potentially could help improve mood. I've been working out more this year than usual. The part of it is dialing in my sleep. And I know, you know, that's been an issue with my obstructive sleep apnea, but I started taking creatine, and then I started feeling just even mentally more energized. I don't know if that's
from creatine.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. So people who follow my recommendations, even going back to the Bulletproof diet, they're red meat centric, yeah. which means you can get enough creatine if you're eating enough red meat. If not, you supplement. I do both. So yeah. I take, I think 5 grams, 4 grams. I'd have to look at the little packets I use. Mm-hmm. And yeah, because of, at a minimum, because of cell hydration, it's going to make your brain work better. That's yeah. the worst case, but it probably also increases mitochondrial function. And there's enough studies too.
And when I was also sleep deprived also, because I could, you know, I have your kind of lifestyle where we could be on multiple continents in 1 week. And so there's a jet lag and sleeping, you know, outside of your normal, you know, normal bedroom and time zones. I felt that also helped support it when I was lack of sleep. I don't think anything is truly as good as getting good quality, deep and REM sleep, but the creatine definitely helped with that for sure. What about alpha GPC? It's something we talked about also in terms of increasing choline levels. Which is synthesis of acetylcholine, the neurotransmitter for learning and cognitive functions.
I like things that increase acetylcholine for brains that need acetylcholine, mm. right? So a little bit of alpha GPC is all right. I also like CDP choline, which mm-hmm. I think has a better effect on cell membranes. It's relatively nuanced, but there is an argument for both or for being more CDP choline heavy. The thing is, though, if you're young, like I became a voracious learner about how to learn because I realized I sucked at it. This is when I yeah. failed my first semester of college and was like, I thought school was easy because I went to a really? Crap high school. I'm like, uh-oh, you know, I was top of my class even though I slept all the time. Maybe that you can't do that in college. So I got really, really into all these different things I could do back then. There's a book called Where There's a Will, There's an A, which was probably one of those... It's one of those like very, very early, I wish I could be Jim Quick books. Mm-hmm. And do you know the book? Have you even heard of it?
Yeah, I have. Yeah. It's very, very early.
Yeah, it was very, very early. But this helped me. It's like, oh my God, there's like a yeah. technique to learning and to study and just to take tests. And it really made a difference for me. And so you fast forward. But if I put my hat on and said, okay, talking to myself when I was, you know, 17 or 18 or whatever it was back then, and I had just listened to this episode, I would first buy Limitless, the book, and learn all the soft stuff, but mm-hmm. you probably don't need to go heavy on acetylcholine. You could try it. But yeah. what happens to young brains, if they're taking alpha GPC and they're taking too much of it, they will get jaw tension. They'll grind their teeth. They get like tension. I know because I started taking it heavy doses in my 20s and I would get the jaw tension. I didn't know why until Steve Folks, who is one of my mentors, who's been on the show a few times, and wrote the Smart Drugs newsletters on paper in the 80s. Like the guy's just old school. He taught me about them. Oh, you mean as you age, you need more acetylcholine? So you might take, you know, one capsule in your 20s. He's like, I'm rocking it. But then when you're in your 30s, you might need two, right? So it evolves over time. But generally, yes, for alpha GPC. But if you're like muscle tensioned out, maybe not.
What about sulforaphane?
I don't consider sulforaphane as a cognitive enhancer, but it's a longevity substance with an upside and a downside. Are you a fan of it for the brain?
For brain health, not necessarily as a nootropic. I wouldn't qualify it as, but to potentially reduce oxidative stress, inflammation.
Sulforaphane is something that I wrote about in my longevity book, but not in my brain book, right? And so keeping your brain functioning and young is really important.
Right.
For brain health, I like it. I did notice, though, I was taking a broccoli sprout extract where you find a lot of sulforaphane. Mm. And my thallium levels went up meaningfully. Thallium is a toxic heavy metal that is tied mostly to kale. That's the member of that plant family that soaks it up the most. But it's present in all of the brassicas. So my theory is that it was accumulating in the extract of broccoli sprouts. And when I stopped taking them, I just had a test actually yesterday and my thallium levels are back down to zero because I don't eat kale. And I try not to eat things that ate kale. I'm kidding. But I think as long as it's a quality extract that's properly tested, I think it's probably good for you. I did not test the one I was taking. This was years ago.
Are you a fan of mushroom, like lion's mane?
Yeah. I wrote about all the science. I was so excited about lion's mane at the very beginning of the biohacking movement because of all this BDNF, right? And there are great studies, but most of the supplements I was taking didn't work. And I even put lion's mane in Bulletproof Coffee at the Bulletproof Cafe on Main Street in Santa Monica in the first year. And there's a well-known company that might have come in and sampled that and launched a lion's mane and coffee thing. To this day, I stand by the fact that your mushroom extracts should be taken separate from your coffee because they make the coffee taste like mushrooms instead of coffee. And I like coffee. Like, take them in a pill. It's just easier, right? Or better yet, a dual extract of alcohol and hot water will work better because a lot of the time you're just getting basically like mushroom sawdust. It's not beneficial. So yes to lion's mane, but it better be good lion's mane.
Right. And these are supplements, not necessarily fall in the nootropics, but you know, for the BDNF, for the nerve growth factor. I mean, just even the foundational things like their omega, just doing nutrient profile tests and making sure you have your omega-3s, your DHAs, your magnesium, because that's part of like hundreds of physiological processes. I don't know. Curcumin, is that something that you would add? Not necessarily as a nootropic, but for reducing inflammation, oxidative stress.
Turning down brain inflammation, improving blood flow in the brain, really, really good stuff. Yeah. And I like it that you said curcumin, not turmeric. Because at various times before I got more and more dialed in on some of the plant toxins, it's tempting to just go buy a bunch of turmeric, the fresh herb, and then you just throw it in everything. You can do it, but it's not quite as strong as spinach and kale, but it's got enough oxalate that if you do that a lot, you'll bump your levels up. And that's bad for longevity. So I think this is one of the major things that we are not talking about in the world of aging is plant toxins. So I'm kind of doubling down on that. So curcumin, yes. Turmeric, occasional spice, but don't, you know, add a pound of it to your smoothie every day. You probably won't like what happens to your kidneys afterwards.
What about ashwagandha, adaptogenic herb?
Yes, for most people, but not all the time. This will sound funny. Ashwagandha kind of levels things out, but what this can do is it can make it harder to reach orgasm. And maybe for some people, that's a good thing.
I did not see that coming.
Hey, did you really just say, I did not see that coming? What, was that an intentional joke, Jim? It was. God, look how fast he is. But it really does do that. So ashwagandha, I like. I was taking a high dose of it and I actually noticed that effect. And now people are laughing about this. Yeah, I'll just say that sometimes like the inability to experience pleasure, too much ashwagandha. So a reasonable dose for most people, I like it. Yeah. Excessive dosing, I don't. So if it's in five of the things you're taking, you got an issue here.
What about for blood flow, like ginkgo?
Love it. It's one of the most studied brain things. I take ginkgo every day. I love it that you're recommending that. And you put that in your brain tea. What's in your brain tea recipe from the book?
That's just changed over time. Sometimes I'll even put some of your coffee in there also.
The danger coffee, nice.
Yeah, because this our family. That's one of our go tos. The good to know about lion's mane, mixing it for that. But
you can put it in your smoothie or in the tea. It's just like if you wanted to have a clean tasting cup of really good coffee, there's no reason to throw it in the coffee and do it that way. Just take a pill or do a tincture and then you enjoy the coffee. I only want to put things that enhance the flavor of my coffee and enhance the functionality at the same time. If it enhances functionality, take it separate from the coffee.
Yeah, I'm a fan of ginkgo.
Yeah, I like ginkgo.
It's always for a long time. It's just kind of in my family's used that in different forms, but for memory, for cognitive function, for increasing blood flow, different parts of your anatomy also as well. But yeah, this is something interesting because I've never really talked about I've learned so much at your events and through your work, but I've kind of avoided this. But we put all of these in one of the chapters because people ask about nootropics, brain nutrition. Your brain is only 2% of your body mass, but it requires 20% nutrients, and some of those nutrients are a little bit different than the rest of your body. But yeah, for people looking for an edge and or maybe some kind of advantage, that's definitely something people could look into. I also don't think for everything's for everybody. So people, I'm not a nutritionist. People could, go to their expert. And Dave's one of those individuals that imparts good knowledge. So absolutely. It's so wild also knowing that you're that we have a live audience. This is like a first for me. So it's I'm just imagining, I'm just saying hi to the collective again.
They're doing the wave right now.
Yeah, I love it. I love this.
It's really cool because I love it. One of the questions that they're asking is, and this is from Todd, says, are you combining nootropics with breathing or cold plunge or other biohacking techniques? Like, talk about how you approach them in Limitless Expanded Edition.
Yeah, so we do address biohacking, and let's see. I mean, my morning routine and my evening routines, they've changed over time. Especially, we had our firstborn this year, and he's 10 months old, and that just is not as easy as having 90 minutes to kind of get my brain right. That rarely happens. You know, for me, I do some either you could do low cost things. I read that the Babylonians and ancient Greeks, they used to believe that everything was made up of four elements: air, fire, water, earth. And so the first 12 minutes of the day, I just have to go outside. I have to get grounded. I just, regardless of transfer of electrons, everything, I just feel good when I'm barefoot on the ground. It's just kind of how I grew up. So that's my earth. They get the sunlight, even if it's a little bit hazy outside. You know, our eyes are the only part of our brains that are outside of our skulls to help me kind of reset my circadian rhythm. I have to be extra particular about that to help me sleep better at night. We can lose up to a pound of water at night sometimes through respiration and perspiration. So I want to make sure I hydrate, and people could add whatever they add, whether it's salt or some kind of electrolytes. I'm sure you have a preference. I don't know, like, do you have some kind of additive to your water that makes it?
Yeah, I mean, since the very first episode, I think I've been talking about adding Himalayan salt or mine salt or sea salt or whatever to your water, especially in the morning for adrenals. And I have even doubled down on salt since then. I've been doing 8 grams of sodium a day, which is about almost four times the recommended amount from the government. Because I've just become more and more convinced that the government actually wants you to die. I don't know another way to put it, because the recommendations for sodium they have are so low that if you followed them, it raises your heart attack risk meaningfully. Because low sodium is dangerous, and high sodium without potassium and all is dangerous. So I use either salt, you know, a natural full spectrum salt, or I'll use something like Element in my water. And especially when I'm flying, especially here, I don't really drink plain water. It's always filtered. It's always energetically structured. When I can do it, and then I add some sort of electrolyte, because it's kind of dumb to drink clean water that has no electrolytes. It doesn't work very well.
I feel that. Yeah. On our podcast, we had Dr. Lisa Moscone. I don't know if you had her on the show.
She's been on. Yeah, she's great.
Yeah. She's a neuroscientist and also a nutritionist. And she was saying that staying hydrated can boost your reaction time, thinking speed upwards, some subjects upwards of 30%. So that's the water. So I have fire from the sun, you know, the ground, I have earth, my water, and some breathing. Whether it's Wim Hof breathing or alpha breathing, box breathing, fire breathing, whatever. Just, I feel like it just clears the mental cobwebs from the night before. But that all takes 12 minutes. I got it timed in. But obviously, you know, I've been exposed to so many different biohacks. You know, where I'm here now, I have a heart hyperbaric chamber. That was a big part of my TBI recoveries. Protocol, just getting oxygen in the part of my brain where I just was damaged, and then I didn't have just adequate blood flow. I just recently did a follow-up with our mutual friend, Dr. Daniel Amen, and it's remarkably different post for that. Red light. My go-to's cold, heat, and the float tank. Because of that, the sensitivity I have with my sleep, floating has just been really good for me. It's been a very therapeutic way. Mm-hmm. It's funny, like I don't want to oversimplify this, but my day is really spent doing 4 C's in terms of, so I'm not multitasking. I'm trying to, when we switch from one activity to another, it's just, you have to light up a different cognitive web. And it not only does it take time to regain your focus, but it also, we make more mistakes if we're trying to do too much at the same time. And also we use, you know, more brain glucose, so people feel a little depleted. But generally, and I'm not recommending people follow this, but understand the principle behind it. In the morning time, I feel most creative. So I just want to create. I'm not looking for input. I'm looking for getting output out of myself. Right. That's when I write or I sketch out podcasts or I plan a new course. In the afternoon, I tend to consume. So I'll make them 4 C's. In the morning, I create. In the afternoon, I'll consume. I'll listen to podcasts, research, read books, those kind of things. And then at night, the third C is I clear. I just want to empty my mind, get in that parasympathetic rest, digest, which means that clearing could be journaling. It could be as easy as kind of reviewing my day or talking to my wife about my day. It's a way of me clearing or planning my day the next, the next day. It's just clearing because I don't have to obsess or ruminate about things I have to do in the next day. Journaling, some people you do yoga nidra, but it's like morning, I'm so creative and I don't want to shunt that. And I have a lot of energy. I just create. In the afternoon, I consume. In the evening, I clear. And if I was to add the fourth C, it's just communicate. And that's usually... I usually do it in batches. Like I task batch everything because I just feel like when I was sleeping, you know, this, it's, you know, sleeping 90 minutes a night or 2 hours a night for 5 years because I'm misdiagnosed with that obstructive sleep apnea. Oh. I had to lean into all of these things. So I'm just kind of documenting and sharing what I do, but I'll go for get my steps in and then also do all my calls at the same time, ideally. And now it's never perfect like that. Nobody has a perfect life because, you know, life is messy. it's just like learning. But if those four C's are big buckets for me and I try to do them at the same, as much as possible, and that kind of just makes it easy. But all the biohacks is amazing. I met Wim Hof speaking at an event in Boston in 2012, and cold has always been part of, and I'm not... You know, especially when you're tired, you don't really want to get in the cold, but that's something that just, it's just a nervous system reset for me. I mean, besides the dopamine and all the other inflammation, all the benefits that come from it, that and sauna is just, it's like my go-tos.
You know, I'm all about foods that do more than one good thing for you at a time. And that's why bovine colostrum has long been one of my favorite ingredients. It's got tons of research backing it, and they're almost too good to be true, except they're real. Colostrum fortifies your gut. It decreases inflammation. It even reactivates hair growth. It stimulates your body to grow more of its own collagen. And in studies, it increases fitness endurance, it strengthens immunity, and it revs up your metabolism. I specifically love Armra colostrum because it's sustainably sourced from grass-fed cows, and I can feel that it actually works. I've tried quite a few colostrum products over the years that didn't seem to do anything. This stuff is very noticeable. They strictly use only the surplus supply of colostrum after calves are fully fed. This is really important for animal sustainability. It's also been proven in several studies to have the highest potency and bioavailability of any colostrum available on the market, with auditing and third-party testing to back it up. That's why I can feel that it works. This is huge because a lot of the colostrums that didn't work for me didn't work because they used heat pasteurization that depletes nutrient potency and denatures proteins. Because Armra colostrum has a unique purification process, it's got about 400 plus living bioactive nutrients that are perfectly intact. I started using it several months ago, and I've noticed a really meaningful difference in energy levels, in my hair, in my skin, and even workout recovery time. I even took some to Burning Man with me. I take one dry scoop in the morning, which is also good for your oral microbiome, and at night I mix it into just water before I go to bed. This stuff has thousands of five-star reviews, so give it a try and see what you think. Go to tryarmra.com/Dave. Enter code Dave to get 15% off. That's tryarmra.com/Dave, code Dave.
What if there was a way to feel younger for longer? Well, there is. Your body needs something called the NAD plus molecule to help you age well. When you're young, your body makes a lot of NAD plus, and that helps you make energy. It helps you keep your DNA healthy, absorb nutrients well, and it protects your cells from stress. But once you hit about 30, your NAD plus levels start to drop. The good news is that longevity scientists have found some things that can help, like niacin, niacinamide, and Niagen. They help your body make more NAD plus even as you age. All three of these are in an amazing formula called Qualia NAD+. Check out Qualia NAD+ risk-free for up to 100 days at neurohacker.com/Dave15 to save an extra 15%. That's neurohacker.com/Dave15, Qualia NAD+. It's what I use.
It's funny that we arrived at pretty much the same place, right? Because I had a brain injury, and it was what Dr. Amen, and I'm so honored. I'm on his board of directors now. I don't know if we're in touch with that. Yeah, for Amen Clinics. He's going to come back on the show soon. But this is a man who really changed, I think, both of our lives just with his work. What Dr. Heyman said was that I had mold toxin induced brain damage, like literally chemically induced brain damage and big holes in my brain and low blood flow and all that. And when I came back later, it had healed. So I just want people to hear that. You had a physical brain injury. I later had another big brain injury with a bleed where I, you know, couldn't remember anything. And between hyperbaric and the right nootropics and neurofeedback and breathing and cold, you can come back. And like, I've come back twice. You've come back. And so like you're doing it right is all I can say. And so for people listening, if your brain just isn't working, it's fixable. It's a hardware problem. You can do this.
And I love that you say that because it just gives people hope and real help, right? It's amazing. I had three like bad kind of accidents with when it came to my head injuries, falling off a rooftop. I flipped really far off my bike head first and just like really, your brain is very resilient, but it's also very fragile. You know, my parents, they immigrated here. They had many jobs. So I wasn't very well supervised. Like kids, I think sometimes are even overprotected in so many ways. But, you know, I'm just kind of thinking that as a new father. But do I wish I didn't have those injuries? Maybe part of my wish I did, but also it got me to where I am today. And I feel like we hear a lot about post-traumatic stress. We don't hear a lot about post-traumatic growth, like those individuals that come through something that they wouldn't, I'm sure some of your listeners have been through an experience they wouldn't wish upon anybody.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't change what they went through because through it, they found some kind of clarity. They found some kind of trait, maybe a mission or a purpose or a strength that they didn't realize that they had. You know, and I think we're best suited also, Dave, to support and serve the person we once were. You know, that person that you were in Silicon Valley where you're overweight and you had, you know, these challenges. I feel like it builds a level of empathy and level of compassion, understanding for what people are going through. Because for the longest time, I never shared.
Yeah,
you know, my losing my grandmother to Alzheimer's, or just, you know, my being bullied, or just you know, having my learning difficulties or head injury. But I feel like it just makes it more real and raw. I think people are really looking for something that's tangible. And but yeah, I think we're best for all of us. I think we're best served to support the people we once were. So I do the work I do for that 9-year-old kid that was labeled, you know, broken and didn't believe in himself, that was fearful and getting sick every single time he went to school just because of the anxiety that I had and, you know, learning disabilities that I had.
It takes a certain level of vulnerability. I was actually talking with Gary Vee about this as well, just very recently recording with him. And same thing, you got to talk about the things you went through, and he talks about childhood and all that. And one of the things that really stood out is maybe 15 years ago, the CEO of Cisco Systems, major player in computer tech stuff, a multi-billion-dollar company, many, many multi-billions. And the CEO, John Chambers, who I've met a few times over the years, he was at a charity event, and this little girl had a speech impediment, just started crying, kind of like the experience you and I described earlier. And he just stopped and he said, look, it's okay. I had ADHD, I still do, right? And this was one of the first times anyone in a position of corporate power was willing to talk about it. Like, this guy was like a big dog at the time. He was probably one of the top 100 biggest companies out there. And he had built it like up for many, many years. So he was in a position of power and influence to be able to talk about the inner struggles. And that helped to normalize. Now, when people are really successful, like, hey, it might look easy. You might tell yourself the story about it, but no, I've dealt with it. Yeah. And I love just how authentic you are in that. Because yeah, you felt like a failure and you had a brain problem. I felt like a failure. I had a brain problem and I had a health problem. And learning to deal with those things has made both of us limitless.
And I think, and I'll give you a plug because I'm invested in this, but something to help me, you know, along the way reconcile that shame and that embarrassment and the forgiveness was going through 40 years of Zen.
Oh, thanks, so, man. Thanks for the mention.
I was one of your early clients for that.
Yeah.
And it was something that was just came at the right time, not just to forgive events, because that loss of balance was due to another person where I had my head injury, but be able to reconcile that and not hold that angst. And then also the self-forgiveness and the fact that everything is just very, you know, it's very measurable. And so that was something, yeah, I have to put in terms of like top 10 in terms of on my personal journey. And you should put a link in the show notes. I don't know if people know what it is, but
yeah.
And I definitely love to do another session in the future. Because I just feel like it's a reboot, right? Sometimes we have to disconnect to reconnect, but if you could do it in a way and get these incredible, measurable, visceral results for doing the inner work. I mean, we hear all about like everyone's doing the outer work and exercising and doing all this stuff, but that emotional thread, you know, and to be able to help with your state regulation, you know, your nervous system, be able to get into that kind of those different brainwave states. They're very, very therapeutic.
Well, thanks for the mention. And guys, if you're new to the show, 40 Years of Zen is my neuroscience company. It's a 5-day in Seattle with the highest end neuroscience that I can figure out on how to improve your brain function. We've actually got 7 patents in neuroscience, build our own hardware and software for improving brain function. And you go through in a very small group. And like Jim says, it's a major reboot. And about 1,500 people have gone through there. And it's been life-changing. And I've spent 6 months of my life with electrodes on my head building out the program. So there's a reason I can do some of what I do, because I learned the states and I've done all the other weird stuff too, like you have. What's the weirdest thing you've ever done to fix your brain?
I mean, that wasn't weird, but that was definitely a unique experience.
It's right, not as weird as drugs, but people oftentimes compare them as to psychedelic
therapy. I mean, this was like 10 years ago.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
And right before that, I had flew from a procedure. I had an intrathecal stem cell procedure. So that was kind of an interesting stack for me, because I was wanting to repair my brain. So I did this stem cell procedure and I flew right from where I got it done to your facility in Seattle. So that was quite an experience. I'm curious actually what most people have done, if they could take a screenshot of this, tag Dave, tag myself, and what's the most interesting thing you've done to kind of hack your brain.
Oh, that's a really good idea. You're always good at including your community in a really gentle way. I love that idea. So, I mean, I've done all sorts of weird stuff. I mean, enemas don't even count. But I'm really curious.
Yeah.
Tell me about your exercise stuff, because you have like a section in the book on exercises for the brain specifically. I want to go into that.
Yeah, I mean, physical exercise is also part of it. And so I mentioned I've been more physical this past year. And for the exercises that I prefer, I mean, I've done a lot of table tennis with Dr. Daniel Amen.
Amen. Yeah, I bought a table because of him as well. Okay, I love that. Shout out. Do you still do that now?
I do. We have a table and it's fun activity, hand eye coordination, reaction time. I get a little bit bored, you know, using my dominant hand, so I'll switch off, you know, left and right hand. But I feel like it's a great workout. Also, it's a nice brain break in between of meetings. If I have like 10, 15 minutes and I want to just do something physical, we just know as your body moves, your brain grooves. The number one reason why we have a brain is to control our movement. And it's not just a mind-body connection. There's certainly a body-mind connection in terms of helping development. I'm seeing this with our 10-month-old, you know, when he started to crawl, you know, and do those kind of cross laterals and get his, you know, his somatic awareness and his balance. Dance is something that is interesting. I like things like martial arts where I take my mind and I have to kind of put it into my body. It's because of you though, that I have a lot of the chi machines and the fancy things, because time is of the essence. So I really don't want to spend, you know, hours upon hours in the gym every single week.
You're an Upgrade Labs fan.
Oh yeah. I think I was your first client in Santa Monica.
I think you were.
Tested everything for 3 months with your amazing expert staff. But yeah, it's just the physicality of it. I've done martial arts my whole life. So that's some part that feels very good for me. And then, but resistance training, whether it's the RX or team, any of the things that you have at Upgrade, it's important. I mean, it helps with your neurotransmitter, right? Dopamine, serotonin, endorphins, produce BDNF, your brain-derived neurotropic factors, can help lower systemic inflammation. I mean, there's so many benefits that come from physical exercise. Exercise for the brain. I'm still a big fan of reading, and I know it's so old school, but if people seen pictures of me with, you know, the Elon and the Oprahs, it's just, we bonded. People always ask, like, we bonded over books, no joke, because you read to succeed. Even Warren Buffett, I mean, there's this one time at his annual meeting that he was at the mall just playing bridge with people. And I'm not a big bridge player, but I went through the rotation. I got to talk to him and he validated. He really does read 500 pages a day. I don't know what he does now, but it interests me. So I think reading is to the mind what exercise is to the body. If you want to grow your muscles, you give it two things. You give it novelty and you give it nutrition, right? And same thing with your mental muscles. I feel like novelty through, I like reading. I'm not a big fan of a lot of the brain games, and I think a lot of them have been debunked.
Yeah.
You know, matching shapes or color, it doesn't really translate into every day. That's why we focus on things that are very measurable, like, and very relevant. You need to remember names and faces or client information, product information. You can measure reading speed, reading comprehension, giving speeches or language learning, whatever. You could just come back to that. You can measure focus. But I love reading. The only caveat is, I would say, is I read fiction and nonfiction. I never used to read fiction ever, but I started seeing results. I saw studies that fiction reading, I think when you read nonfiction, you learn through information. And when you read fiction, you learn through imagination. Fiction reading has been shown to have a positive effect on your EQ,
like emotional
quotient, the narrative, be able to see things from different points of view and higher levels of empathy through the storytelling. The only thing is I do read my fiction at night exclusively because I don't want to read a book on neuroscience or biohacking and again my kind of executive brain before I go to sleep. That's still I'm looking to, clear, right? Get into that parasympathetic rest and digest.
Is it stressful or invigorating to read a book on neuroscience?
It's not stressful, but it just puts me in this state where I start thinking a lot and I don't want to ruminate over all these different ideas. And so that's why I kind of keep it in the afternoon for my afternoon reading. I can take a little brain break and read and study and research. But I've also trained my nervous system. So first thing in the morning, I'm just creative. Afternoon, I'm just consuming. The only thing I will consume in the evening would be more, because I'm not a big binge watcher of a lot of television, but I will read a good fiction book or a comic book even. People know that I wanted to get into comics and draw comics and write comic books. And I learned how to read by reading comic books. And so it's something that just kind of brings me joy. And that's a big part of, my fifth, this is a big year, brand new book, our first child, getting into my 50s. I'm also want to bring joy into the things that I do. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, it's something that I feel like if you do the things that you love, then you could add 5 days, to every week, because most people look forward to the weekends, right? But also if you're not doing what you love, I think we can have the mindset where we could discover or find the love in what we do. Because there's so many people that aren't necessarily doing anything that they're really passionate about, but they find joy in the process of doing whatever it is they're doing. But there's a quote in Limitless from a French philosopher that sums it up, saying, life is the letter C between B and D. Life is C between B and D, where B is birth, D is death, life C is choice. And I just saying this to remind everyone that our lives are the sum total of all the choices we made up to this point. Who are we going to spend time with? What are we going to do? Where are we going to live? What are we going to eat? What are we going to feed our minds? All those different things. And I truly believe that these difficult times, they could either distract you and people have a real agenda for that, or they could diminish you, or these difficult times, they could develop you. We decide. And I think that a lot of your listeners share have this similar, different, but similar stories as us that, we went through this and we decided what these things mean. And we started looking for the gift in all this. Like my two biggest challenges were learning and public speaking for the longest time. And, life has a sense of humor because all I do is public speak on this thing called learning.
Right.
And even with my sleep deficiency, sleeping 90 minutes a night for 5 years and then learning to be able to hack that, being exposed to your work and other, sleep experts and having this very painful UPPP surgery where they took out my, at UCLA, took out my soft palate, my uvula, my tonsils to just create airflow. And then my sleep jumped up to 4 years. But in order to deal with it, think about all the angst you have when most people just excited to go to sleep or just relax and look forward to it. For me, it was just, I stopped breathing 250 times a night. Each time was an episode, counts as an episode if it's more than 10 seconds. So it's like somebody putting a pillow over your face 250 times a night. But even that, I had to say, where's the gift in this? And I found two things. I was like, okay, it forced me to double down on everything I teach because I wouldn't be able to be productive or perform right. like I can if I didn't. And then the other thing is I got really conscious of my time because so many people I think are a little drained because they're saying yes too much. And I just want to remind people when you say yes to somebody or something, you're not saying no to yourself. And so for everything in my life, it's hell yes or hell no. It's always been that. Like when I'm on your stage or I'm like with you and we're, you know, cutting a good steak and just like that's where I want to be. Because mm-hmm. because when you're sleep deprived, you can't commit to a lot of things. And so it's always like it's that binary for me. But that's how I find the gift in it. And then I could, you know, resolve it. And then, you know, I hopefully it served me because now my sleep is, you know, it's not where I want it to be, but it's still, because think of in mind, I also lifestyle wise, I would pull these all nighters as a kid because I had learning difficulties. So I'd work three times harder than everybody else. Yeah. I built very bad habits and my career I've spent, I think I've been three continents in 1 week. So it just really messed with my sleep.
It really does. By the way, I flew from Austin to Toronto and back in the last 2 days. Wow. So I'm with you on the, you know, the crazy stuff, but you can handle it now better than you could back then, can't you?
So much better. Yeah.
Because you've mastered your brain.
And I think this is how these things show up because I believe the life we live are the lessons we teach, right? And like you're sharing the things and certainly you do your research, but you're sharing things that have worked for you. And, you know, shame on us. Like I'm talking, whoever's listening to this and needs a little push, like going back to like serving the person you once were, like I almost feel a moral responsibility. That's how I got over my stage fright, where I'd be like, not just scared, I'd be phobic. I couldn't breathe. I would pass out. You know, just thinking about being on in front of like even like second grade students when I started out, like when in my career. But what got me over it was focusing on the person that could benefit because you have a moral obligation to, I feel, almost help people that are struggling. Because shame on me if somebody's struggling the way I did and I didn't, I didn't help them. And I just feel like that's my kind of take on it. But that's what gets me over my, you know, the challenges that I have. And why we're having this conversation now. And so this, I think it's just, I'm so passionate, no matter how much lack of sleep I had and so much, but I'll just show up for the person who needs to hear something that I've learned along the way.
What's your brain animal?
So, okay. Before I tell people, can I give them like a little context?
Sure.
So the new book, the updated version, not only has case studies of like readers, and we've sold 1 million copies in 3 years of the original book, and very proud of it, donated a lot to build schools in Ghana, Guatemala, Kenya, like again, education for kids. And the first one was about mastering your mindset, your motivation, and the methods for accelerated learning. The fourth pillar we added was momentum. And so like, how do you use AI to enhance your HI, your human intelligence, right? I look at it more as augmented intelligence to be able to support like any technology or tool to accelerate your learning and performance. Another was nootropics, because, you know, once you get out of this, we could also, you know, there's certain supplements that you could take to help give you greater momentum. There's a whole chapter on something called your cognitive types. And again, it's an assessment that was inspired by personality types, Myers-Briggs, left brain, right brain lateralization, learning styles, consuming visual, auditory, kinesthetic learning, introvert, extrovert, multiple intelligence theory. So it was inspired by a lot of various science and psychologies. But really, as we know, the menu is not the meal, right? We've heard that the map is not the territory, but it's to give you distinctions and a lens to look things through. So if you think about code, C-O-D, your brain code, these are the four animals. And maybe as I say this, one will resonate with those who are listening. So the C, because I make everything an acronym, is the cheetah. And the cheetah, the defining trait is action. There's an idea, they learn something, and they put it into action right away. They have very strong intuition. They adapt very quickly. They thrive in fast-paced environments. The O in code are your owls. And then, by the way, we're not any one of these. We're a composite, but there's usually one that's more primary and then secondary. It's like if you're right-handed, doesn't mean you don't use your left hand. It's just it hasn't developed as much as where your strength is, right? The O is is defined as an owl, and is defined by owl very logical. So these are people who love data, they love facts and figures and the information, they do their research. And again, we're a combination of this. The D in code are your dolphins, and these are your creatives. They can maybe even see a future that other people can't yet see, or you know, their business, like a Disney kind of thing, or J.K. Rowling's, where they have this vision. They're very creative. They're strong with pattern recognition. And then finally, the E are your elephants, and their defining trait is empathy. And these are your community builders. These are your people who have high levels of empathy and compassion, strong interpersonal skills. And just as an example, like we had our team take this, and 100% of our customer service team, 10 plus people, they're all elephants. And we didn't hire for them. But it's interesting how we naturally will gravitate towards jobs or positions that allow us to be in our element, where we get to highlight and live in our zone of strengths and traits. Our CFO is very strong owl, very numbers.
Right, you need those.
My business partner is, our CEO is a dolphin. You know, has this vision of a billion brains, and it's just been extremely, extremely creative. So it's interesting. You could see this in every day. Like we take this quiz that's in the book, or people could do it at mybrainanimal.com. And it's just like, you know how there's personalized medicine based on like your genetic, you take an assessment like your genetics, or personalized nutrition based on your nutrient profile or microbiome or something. This is like personalized learning, because it's like once you take the quiz, we give you, it informs how you could read better, how you could remember better, even how you could hire, how you can manage, how you could parent based on your brain type. It's kind of like love languages, right? Where somebody has like, you know, words of affirmation, other people as, you know, acts of kindness, and it's, they communicate in different language. It's less like if your brain type is one and some of your teacher's brain type is a different one, it's like you're not getting it, because it's like two ships passing in the night, and you don't even realize the other one's there. Because these, a cheetah invests differently than an owl, right? They parent differently. They communicate differently also as well. So an example, if you take, let's give a reference for point for everybody. If you take something like Friends, right? The sitcom, Ross would be an owl. You know, the professor, the scientist, does a lot of research. Phoebe would be the creative dolphin, expresses through music and, you know, and very passionate about her arts. Joey would be the cheetah, because in the moment he goes into it and he acts and he goes on his intuition and he just adapts. I would think Monica would be the community builder, always wants to host everything at her apartment. She's the elephant, right? And so you can see this in Star Trek and Star Wars and Game of Thrones and all, and Harry Potter. You could put everybody in these categories. And again, the menu is not the meal. It just gives you some distinctions, because even when you're communicating, people would fall in their jobs. Like the cheetahs would be the entrepreneurs, right? They could be EMTs. They could be professional athletes, like Serena Williams or something. The owls would fall into, you know, data analysts or engineers or accountants or research scientists or coders. Or dolphins would be the graphic designers or the writers or the marketing specialists. And your elephants could be HR people or social workers or public relations or teachers or project managers. But you could just even think about famous individuals. You know, Einstein could have been an owl. Marie Curie could have been an owl. Isaac Newton, an owl. Cheetahs could be your Richard Branson, your Steve Jobs. Dolphins could be your Leonardo da Vinci's or your Picasso's. And so it's elephants could be your Mahatma Gandhi or your Martin Luther King's. But it kind of informs like your learning, the way you lead, even hire, manage, because they also communicate differently also as well. Like a cheetah is direct to the point, because they don't beat around the bush, because it's their time, right? Owls take a little bit more time, get the facts, get all the details, would speak more analytically and more methodically. They're willing to listen a little bit more because they want to reflect on and compare it to what they already know. Dolphins would speak about the bigger picture, about future plans, about innovative ideas. They'd be very enthusiastic around it. Elephants would be very keen on understanding and validating the other person's point of view. They want people to feel seen. They want people to feel valued and heard. They would look to create a consensus among people. They would even use words. They wouldn't use so much I and my. They would use words like we and us, you know, emphasizing group unity. And so I think understanding your dominant, you know, cognitive type, it would just be very informative of how you would parent, of how you would hire, for different roles and responsibilities and how you would communicate, negotiate, even selling. You know, like a cheetah would naturally be more agile and adapt to the pace of a client. They would, if you're selling to a cheetah, right? Because everyone speaks their language, their brain language or love language in the other way. But they would, you know, if you're selling to a cheetah, they would appreciate direct value efficiency, skip the small talk,
right?
You know, demonstrate, you know, and owls would, you know, if you're an owl salesperson, you're very detail oriented, and that could work for some people in depth, you know, for see clients' needs and present to tailor solutions. But if you're selling to an owl, they appreciate well-researched presentations and statistics and case studies, whereas a dolphin could care probably less. They want to see the big picture of the future and leverage their natural charisma for storytelling. You know, so you want to speak to their vision and how this offering fits them into a larger picture of innovation or whatever it is you have to offer. And elephants, forget all that. It's all about the relationship, right? A deep relationship, focusing on building trust and rapport. If you're selling to an elephant, you know, spend time understanding their needs, demonstrate you genuinely care about their success, especially, you know, post-sale. And so I feel like, you know, I'm just kind of this stream of consciousness, but when people take the quiz in the book, or we put it online for the first time for free, it's mybrainanimal.com, and you'll get a personalized report, because a cheetah would read things, they would skim and scan speed, right? And owl will be looking for the details. A dolphin who's creative, when they're reading, they'll visualize a lot of what they're reading, because a picture is worth 1,000 words. An elephant reading something would read from empathetic. They want to know where the author is coming from, right? And see the different perspectives. And so I think it informs every area, because our brain is involved in everything. That's the thing I'm right. most excited about with that. And understanding going back to momentum, understanding your brain animal and the animals around you could greatly accelerate the velocity with less friction and conflict, because it's not how smart you are, it's how are you smart. It's not how smart your kids are, it's how are they smart. And just because a different perspective on in terms of, like, there's a scene in Matrix where Neo goes to see the Oracle for the very first time in her kitchen. And I think most people miss this, but there was a sign above the door that Neo walked into the kitchen. It says, "Know yourself." And I feel like that's why people do things, like they go to therapy, or they go to 40 years of Zen, or they do plant medicine, or they get to know themselves, right? To meditate or whatever introspection that they do. And I think we need the curiosity to know yourself, because self-awareness is a superpower. And then I think on the other side, once you have the curiosity to know yourself, you need the courage to be yourself in a world full of other people's opinions and their expectations, like, you know, because who cares? Because if we're fueling, you know, if that's the fuel of our life, we're going to certainly run out of gas, right? But it's a different skill set to be that person once you get to kind of know yourself and what you stand for and who you are and your identity and all that.
Knowing yourself means you can apply yourself better into those things where you're going to get the most return for the amount of effort you put into it. And I like this. I being a cheetah, it only took me 2.5 minutes to do the 4-minute test. Just
you're so good. I give the examples so that way you could kind of see things through a lens, and everything's not, you know, exactly. But again, the menu is not the meal, but it gives you distinctions that we wouldn't normally have. And it takes a judgment sometimes around like the people around us, because they're just acting in accordance to their mental strengths. And also the self-judgment we have on ourselves if we're not good at any of these areas. And can you, over time, change your animal? Certainly, in context and life conditions, could change your value system and putting more emphasis on logic or something. I think it just makes us more of a whole brain. But even when it comes to parenting, like the strengths of a cheetah, parents adapt quickly, and that's very necessary with kids. They can make decisions on the fly and can be very proactive with their kids. A challenge might be that sometimes they're a little bit more impatient because maybe their kids aren't adapting as quickly as they are, right? Or even if you take an owl, owl parents are good at planning, creating structure and environments. They can impart critical thinking skills to their kids, help them approach problems methodically, but they might also have the challenge with, they might overanalyze and might struggle being spontaneous with the kids and having fun and those unpredictable child behaviors. A dolphin, you know, when they're parenting, they could have a lot of a vision. It can instill a sense of wonder and creativity and passion. The challenges might be they might not be practical all the time, as, you know, with dolphins, with the kids, and they overlook certain day-to-day necessities. And then finally, the elephant coming to parenting, the strengths would be empathy. They can understand and relate to the child's feelings and they'll prioritize that connection and be very patient. But the challenges come, they might struggle setting up boundaries with the kids, right? They might prioritize the relationship and they might avoid discipline or conflicts. Mm-hmm. And so it's just, again, self-awareness, you know, understanding your brain, understanding your kid's brain, maybe even like, you know, if you're co-parenting, like, you know, seeing what that dynamic looks like, but in hiring, managing, I mean, it's just, right. And brains are everywhere, right?
But hard question for you. Does your brain type change over time, like as you age or when you have kids or when you get married, or is it fixed?
It can, because of what we know about neuroplasticity, right? When with novelty and new life conditions, and usually it takes a life condition to spawn, because if you have something that happens and it changes your value system in terms of it makes you more, something happens that makes, that's, let's say, very disturbing and it creates more empathy and that's something you value, then you're going to lean more into that elephant, right? And you're looking for more opportunities to express that elephant or to enhance those kind of traits. So again, we're not any one animal because we're composite. I'm sure when you're taking the quiz, there are like two answers. It's often where you can say, I could be this or it could be this. And right. It could be context dependent also as well. Like maybe you're a cheetah in, you know, in the context of business, but maybe you put on more of an elephant hat, like in relationships, and you're more, you know, empathy. So it could be context dependent, and it's not set just because, like multiple intelligence theory, our intelligence is not fixed. Like our shoe size, you can improve your musical intelligence, your kinesthetic intelligence, your interpersonal intelligence, and so much more, your visual spatial intelligence, through proper training. And that's the exciting part about these, you know, genius, because genius is it's not someone's born, it's built through discipline, through sacrifice, through hard work, through focus, through investing in your own personal development, and so much more. So we could evolve over time, certainly into different animals. And also, you know, we make the choice. You know, sometimes, like, if you know that your weaknesses are in this area, you could either go all in on your strengths, or you could increase your, you know, the areas that you're not so good at to balance it out. But it's our choice if you want to be more of a specialist or a generalist, and really depends on the outcome that we have in our learning and our life.
It does. It depends so much. And I actually really like this, Jim. Did you like consult with neuroscientists or use AI? Like, how did you come up with this thing? It's kind of like a Kolbe score or Myers-Briggs. It's lighter weight than that.
And we're building it out also, because we have a lot of, you know, like even with our speed reading memory, you know, we have students in every country in the world, so we have a lot of data. You know, this is what I've been using with coaching clients for years. And this is what I updated Limitless because of two reasons. There's an external reason, because the world has changed a lot the past few years. Sure, and right. AI and, you know, all the stuff that we've gone through the past few years. And also my world, as I mentioned, has changed.
Yeah, with a new baby, both the 9 months leading up to a new baby. And the baby, it's a complete transition. Do you think your brain type shifted?
I'm a strong owl,
you feel like an owl to me.
I love the, you know, the I love facts and theory. I'm not, but also empathy. I have a very strong elephant because I think because I was, you know, struggling so much as a kid, I was isolated, I was bullied. I'm not looking for everyone has their own story, but I would watch people and I could detect suffering in other people because I was living in it, you know, 24/7. That's why I would escape in Dungeons and Dragons and video games or comic books, right? Because I was in so much pain and I didn't have anyone to kind of relate to, but I would see people around me and I would know when they're struggling. And I think that made me an effective coach. Because going back to, like, I know what it feels like to feel insecure about something or not be good at something. So I never take it for granted when I'm teaching speed reading or whatever, that, you know, for something new, it's challenging. That's why every single month I try to pick up a new skill or learn a new subject, because I need to feel that rawness of what it feels like to feel inadequate. Because I feel like it makes me at a meta level a better coach when I pull people into, you know, our strategies and knowledge, skills, and abilities.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I have to admit, Jim, when you told me you're coming out with an expanded edition of Limitless, there's a lot of authors who will kind of like milk a book that way. Oh yeah, it's a new edition. But I've known you for a long time, and you did so well with the first edition. I'm like, But so of course I dug in on it, and it's a whole different book. I mean, you have the core, here's what you need to know technique wise, which you barely talked about on this interview. But then you included all this new stuff it's got a biohacking angle to it that I know this audience will like. And you talk about nootropics, you talk about brain hardware, and you talk about the soft skills and even this brain typing thing. So it's a comprehensive view. And I just have to say, I appreciate all the stuff you're doing in the world. And I still suck at remembering people's names.
And I would say this is the final. I don't know like about updating books, but I'm never going to update this book again. This is the second version, the most complete. I could have wrote a whole new book based on this. But there's over 120 new pages of tactics. Everything for me is very tactical. And so I hope people appreciate it. And Dave, I appreciate your work, your community, your conferences. I don't know how to express it, but I hope I know those who are listening, we're here for a reason. I'm grateful for our friendship. So thank you.
Me too, my friend. Keep doing all the amazing stuff you do in the world, and haven't met your baby yet, but soon enough.
Yeah. Thank you all for the great advice also. You know, I always thought that I would be like, totally like biohacking this kid. And I realized that I'm learning so much more than I feel like I'm teaching. Just the curiosity and the wonder and being present and falling, you know, a million times, but still getting up, trying to stand and to be able to walk. But I would say this for everybody. I'm curious for the community, what brain animal they are. So if they could go to mybrainanimal.com and post the picture and tag Dave and tag me on it on social medias, and I'll repost some of them. And nice. Then gift out a few signed copies of Limitless Expanded just as a thank you for having me on the show. And then I just want to say that I want to remind everybody that there's a version of yourself that's patiently waiting. And the goal is we show up every single day until we're introduced. So,
Jim, that was such an epic ending, but I have to disagree with you.
Okay.
If you're a cheetah, do you really think it's patiently waiting?
Well, I don't think patience is like standing by passively. For me, patience is maintaining a good attitude while we keep on thriving.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm just teasing you. Because sometimes disagreement is fun. It is waiting, and it'll be there until you tap into it, if you do. Yeah. And that's beautiful.
Let's do it.
Guys, thank you for tuning in and listening. And you can tell Jim and I go back a long time. And I've had a good number of authors on the show. And this year, I'm actually having far fewer authors on. The reason being that every day, I get at least a dozen pitches from PR agencies. And they're sending me what I call Me Too books. And so a lot of these are, you know, from big publishing houses. But it's like, oh, another book on intermittent fasting. Like, what's different in this book? Right. And it could be like, oh, this is one like for women. I'm like, okay. So what's different in this book versus the chapter with every study on fasting for women that's already been written? Right. So it has to have something new in the world. It cannot be a rehashing. Right. And it can be whatever. So I've just told my team, like, I want to say no. But if it's something that's new and that's noteworthy, and someone who's really doing the deep work, then I want to have more of those. And I'm doing more researchers, more scientists, more people doing stuff in the world, because I think there's a lot to learn from them. Like Gary Vee, he writes books, but does a lot of other stuff too. He's just on. And so you by far make the cut because you're a world acknowledged expert in this. You've been doing it for so long and your book is new. Like it's not stuff you've read before. So guys, if you're just looking for a really strong endorsement on what to read or listen to if you want, I would highly recommend Limitless Expanded Edition. Just check it out. Jim is 100% the real deal. We've known each other for more than a decade. I just can only tell you, great human being, content you won't see anywhere else. And I think he undersells himself all the time because he's such an owl.
I would say also this, like how do we become limitless in a perceived limitless world? We do it together. Yeah. And I love this community. And I hope to see everybody at the next... at the Biohacking Conference. Everyone should register now and go.
Good point. The biohackingconference.com. There you go. Actually, no, I think it's just biohackingconference.com. Yeah, go to biohackingconference.com. Sign up. There's a bunch of other ones who try to call themselves the same name. If it doesn't have my face on it, it's probably not mine.
All right.
I'll see you, brother.
Take care, everybody.
You're listening to The Human Upgrade with Dave Asprey. The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media. The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.